in association with iFanboy. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. More coverage from our C2E2 convention that wrapped up 2 weekends ago. It was a great time, and I'm very happy to announce that for today's episode, we've got the C2E2 podcast panel for 2011. A nice group of podcasters got together. Chris Niesman of Around Comics and 11 O'Clock Comics was the moderator, and you'll hear some very familiar voices. Among those that Whitney Matheson chose as part of her USA Top 10 list, and good representation of the podcasting community on this discussion. And I was pretty pleased with the subjects that we covered as well, including subjects that the audience brought up. It was a nice discussion. I was afraid nobody else had recorded it. I was on the dais, but really I didn't have a microphone near me. There were only 4 microphones and there were 8 of us on the panel. But I was able to take my copy of it and clean it up a little bit, and I'm pleased with the audio results. It's not perfect. I was not connected to the soundboard, but that's okay. I think we got a nice sound. And yes, there's a little bit of talking over each other, as all of us podcasters are wont to do. I have my own version of Tourette's. Sometimes I can't shut up and have a lot of running comments as other people are speaking, so I apologize in advance. But I think you'll enjoy the discussion, the subjects that we covered, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. It's brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, one of the great sponsors of several of the podcasts that you'll hear on today's program. InStock Trades has a wide variety of trade paperbacks, hardbacks, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, and more at reasonable discount prices. And again, not only that, they also have discount comic book service, DCBService.com, their monthly service, in addition to MyDigitalComics.com, a great way to get digital comics from mainstream and independent publishers at good reduced rates. So check out all the details and check out their websites. There's discount comic book service at DCBService.com, where you'll get savings of 30 to 75% off the cover price on your monthly order needs. There's InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you get 30 to 50% off the standard retail price, in addition to free shipping for orders of $50 or more. And there's My Digital Comics, where you'll find a great selection of comics at very reasonable prices for all of your digital devices, whether they be smartphones, iPads, tablets, you name it. Check it out for yourself, all the wonderful products that come from InStockTrades.com. All right, let's turn things over to 2 Fridays ago. It's Chris Niesman as the moderator as we begin the C2E2 podcast panel right here on Word Balloon.
First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for coming to the comedy death ray. And expected more of you, but we didn't get a bigger room. I am Chris Niesman. Of course, welcome to the 2011 C2E2 comic book podcaster panel. Appreciate everyone hanging around. We're going to get everyone introduced, and in great podcast fashion, there are as many podcasters as listeners here. So we'll start right here. Guys, just go down the row, say your name, what podcast or podcasts you represent.
I'm Josh Flanagan from iFanboy.com and the podcast there.
I'm Brian Salazar from Around Comics.
I'm Chris Marshall from Collective Comics Library.
I'm Jim Segulin with Raging Bullets.
John Suntress from Word Balloon.
Peter Rios, Comic Geek Speak.
CBD with Everything Comes Back to Share.
Which is awesome.
The way we're going to do this is kind of shoot from the hip. We're going to do almost entirely question and answer. We're going to start off questions and answers from within the panel here, and then we'll open up to everyone out there. So you guys, anyone has a question that you want to ask the rest of the group here, go ahead.
I got one. I've heard this mentioned on other podcasts, and I wanted to hear some of the hosts talk about it. As the comic properties get bigger exposure in film, television, computer games, is it a failure if it doesn't result in comic book sales? Do you guys think it's a failure?
I think it depends on the publisher.
It depends on who the beneficiary is, I guess. If you look at, like, I've used this example a lot, is if you look at the money that Iron Man made, however ridiculous amount of money, and how that translated to, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 copies a month of the Iron Man book, that kind of sucks. Like, it shouldn't go anywhere. But at the same time, if you look at something like Scott Pilgrim, and even though that movie is considered a failure, it helped out in, you know, it helped out the company, Oni, and the creator, Brian Lee O'Malley, you know, immeasurably. They still sold way more books than they would have otherwise. So, you know, it depends, I guess. Like, I mean, it's like whatever it takes to get people in shops and get some, there's some win out of it. But it's kind of, I think after 10 years.
But I guess my more direct question is awareness of the properties enough of, I think that's enough of a success. Because I just think with the decline in readership in general, whether it's comic books, books, whatever, I have no problem with these characters living on in these other...
That just services IP. That doesn't actually do anything for comics in general. That means Marvel and DC make more on the bottom line, but as far as like leading to really good comic books being made and developed, that doesn't really help that.
My birth into comic books wasn't... comic books. It was the Spider-Man cartoon. It was the Batman TV show. So these outside properties can't bring people in that won't directly. Well, it's a long term thing that we're not going to know. They did in the 60s and 70s.
The X-Men cartoon is huge. A lot of people who listen to us were like brought in by that. But since, you know, X-Men in 2000, I don't think we've seen that translate from those huge blockbuster movies.
I think if you speak of it in just marketing terms, it's a failure to capture those people now, whether or not you actually can, whether or not there's ever a way to translate people who don't even see a film into comic book readers. I don't know if that's even possible.
Can you hear him?
But it is.
No, into the mic.
Just try to help.
Do shows that often anymore?
But it is.
from just the marketing standpoint, it's a failure to capture those people. I mean, if you look at it just a percentage of eyes on the screen, they're I don't think they're doing enough with those eyes. I don't think they're doing enough to try and capture them. I don't know that they care.
But that's the thing. I think all of these companies, including the small ones, are IP companies as well. And I do think that with children's taste moving to computer games and things like that, I still see it as a win.
I see it as a win because we were at Seattle whatever weekend, Emerald City Comic Con, and we were talking about the growing number of people who are coming to conventions. It seems like the conventions are not slowing down. Yep. Several conventions, and some of the artists and publishers I talk to that have movies out there say, okay, maybe they don't convert to comic book readers, but they will come to a convention and maybe support an artist because they like their artwork, or maybe will pick up a random comic, or maybe they want to come just to get Chris Hemsworth's autograph. But they say there is a loose kind of like circle going on there.
Yeah.
People coming in, maybe they're not supporting it directly now, but it could happen.
Or if ever. I don't know. Yeah. I
mean, that doesn't create comic book customers. Like one of the things that's really good about Hollywood
who
fucking knows?
but that's what I mean.
And that's the problem. I don't envy the people who have to solve that. But the thing is, people are like, oh, Marvel doesn't do anything about it. I've seen Marvel there's comic books. If on Iron Man Blu-ray, whatever, there's a huge documentary about comic books, you know, Marvel Iron Man comic books. You know, no one bought books from that.
But to go back to your question, though, is it the movie's responsibility to create comic books?
No, that's what I think.
It's the publisher's responsibility to try to take advantage of that as much as possible.
I think the company's responsibility is to exploit the character.
That's how they do it.
Right.
I mean, because they're not looking long-term. They're going, how can we make the most money the quarter that this thing comes out? That's how Marvel and DC do it, you know, because that's how they have to do it, you know, unfortunately. But, the good thing is Hollywood is subsidizing the lives of a lot of creators who wouldn't be able to make a living otherwise in comics. I know we all know guys, you know, you're like, there's no way you're making your living from just comics. You don't sell enough. But all those options and things like that adds up, which is a good thing, sort of. It's like living off your dad's, you know, rent.
What about the audience? I mean, is raise of hands success?
Who here
or failure?
Got into comics from cartoon?
Yeah. If like these movies, you know, come out and it doesn't result in more readership for comics, but there's more awareness for the characters, is it a success or is it a failure?
Did you see the
So success?
Yeah.
Failure?
No,
undecided.
Kind of half a lot of undecideds. This isn't, yeah, we're not, it's not Obama versus Clinton.
I want to bring back to podcast a little bit. You know, this is the first podcasting panel that I think we've done without having to go through a 5-minute explanation of what a podcast is. I'm assuming everyone here listens to or has listened to a podcast, right?
How many people have
podcasters in the audience? That's the obligatory question.
Who wants to start a podcast?
On the subject of podcasts as a known quantity, you know, we've been doing this for, you know, what, 6 years now or so? Do you think we've finally gotten to the point that you can tell someone that, hey, I do a podcast, and they're not like,
hell no. I got people walking by the table today still, and, you know, they see microphones, and they're like, are you doing a radio program?
Yeah.
And I go, no, I'm doing a podcast. What is that? Mm-hmm. You know,
it's a badly named product.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I still constantly have to explain it to people, and people that are not in the comic book community, like, a podcast, what's that? You know, people, coworkers, and I'm talking to, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, Chicago, oh, comic book convention, yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm got my podcast there, what's that? Then these are people I've known for years who still can't grasp.
You need new friends.
What? Yeah. Yes, I do. If it's, I do a show with my friend, I need new friends.
It's, if it's any consolation, working in radio and stuff, they're like, you're in radio. Why do you have a podcast? Some people say that. Some of the smarter people who have been unemployed and are reemployed suddenly see the value of podcasts. And I think every city, Chicago certainly has former radio stars that have turned to podcasting and actually are making, I don't know if it's a living, but they are making money from their podcasts. But again, they're an established brand.
We're at the point that we are starting to see podcasts break through. Like, you're starting to hear those things more often, I think. Yeah. You know, like, people getting bigger mainstream coverage. It's taking a really long time. When we did that first podcast panel, like, 5 years ago, we were like, oh, by 5 years, it'll be everywhere. Everyone will know. Now, you know, like,
New York
Times, like, there's Mark Maron. And you're like, ooh, you know, Charlie Sheen's doing a podcast. And, you know, not that that helps any of us. Or humanity. I'm sorry I mentioned him. But it is, like, it is what he's doing. So it's just starting to eat through a little bit. But, yeah, definitely.
I think more mainstream companies are getting more into podcasts. You see, like, ABC News and, you know, Nightly News. Yeah, they're video podcasts, but they are podcasted with extra bonus material on the other end, even, like, 60 minutes. And to that extent, Josh, you know, 5 years ago in San Diego, the publishers did not take advantage of us. And now they embrace
us. Yes,
you know.
Next question, anybody?
I was just going to say, building on that too, don't you think social networking has obviously helped us?
I think it all works together, and that's.
But that was something that wasn't there as prevalent 5 years ago. I mean, we were still in the message board world.
Twitter and, you know, Facebook was a baby and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think the podcasts have become part of a much larger picture. You know, iFanboy being a very good example of, you know, video and audio and website, news website, and community. And, you know, CGS has always had a, you know, big, messy board community. It's not enough.
That's really all I have. I'm a professional podcaster.
So here's a question, since a lot of us are long time, we've been in this for a while. So, and this might help people who are starting out, maybe want to start out a podcast. Why do we still do it? Why are we still in the game?
What's the definition of insane?
Doing something over and over, yeah.
I get to go to conventions for free.
Yeah. the concept of anybody up here ever paying to get into a convention is so foreign at this point. That's
not the reason why we do it.
Sal and I had a nice conversation about this. Around Comics is now monthly. And we were talking about why we do it monthly.
With family and everything else, it became so much more of a chore to try and do a weekly show, and it took a hobby, which is all it ever was. You know, I mean, you guys are
like I said, you're professional podcasters. But for us, I need a sticker. And that was you. But, you know, for us it was just hobby. And so it became much more of a chore to try to do a weekly show. And it took something that was fun and turned it into a bit more of a job. So now to do it monthly, it just gives me more time to actually, you know, have something to talk about and something, you know, to have fun talking with you and other people. So
it's a chance for us to get, it's an excuse to get out of the house.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, for me at least, there's no higher meaning to what we do. You know, it's literally just, if we would do it anyway, we just happen to record it and some people like it to listen to it. So it's not.
Come on, there's an ego boost from that. Let's be honest.
I certainly enjoy it. I love the fact that people listen to the show, and it's very flattering. Absolutely. I don't know if that's the reason. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it keeps you in the game, though, because I have a ball doing this. You know, Sean and I, we've known each other for over 20 years, and we're friends since high school, and we're just talking comic books, and we're talking about stuff that we enjoy reading. And then, you know, you'll go through, and you have a ball, and you just, you know, BSing for a couple hours, then you get done, and then you get an email from somebody, or you get some feedback from somebody. Hey, I really like what you're saying. Or when we're sitting on the floor, people walk up to you, hey, thanks, man, I really like your show. There is that ego boost, but it doesn't keep you in the game. It does give you a nice recharge, though. Mm-hmm. You get done with an episode, you know, where you've really just, you know, you just unleash and open up, and you're just, you know, having these, you know, discussions where it goes from comic books to movies to TVs back to weird, crazy, you know, tangents. And you get done, you're like, that was fun. You know, there's this energy that you get from doing that.
It is the most fun hour of my week on any given. Like when we do our audio podcast specifically, that 1 hour is kind of, it is incredibly, it's a big rush.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. And it's happening.
You asked the question.
Well, and the listeners will know. I mean, this again, to go back to like maybe newer podcasters, they'll know when you're just phoning it in, if you're just sort of talking the talk or just doing an episode just to do an episode. But if you're really in it and you're covering stuff that you love, and we all here are covering like different parts of the comic industry, and there's certainly tens more, hundreds more podcasts, X-Men and indie comics and whatever, creating comics, and you know, that talking passionately about something you're really good at talking about shines through, and that's what, you know, you're talking about, what makes you come back each week. Well, that's part of it. And if that means one of your listeners gets turned on to a new comic or a new creator, that's awesome, because this is evangelism, right? Like, this is us helping to spread the word, and hopefully they go to some creator and artist alley that they never would have looked at before, so there's a nice sort of another circle of life kind of thing going.
You got to sing Elton John songs to steal.
I'm the gay one. When you guys start your show together?
I love this band.
The first time.
And for me, quickly, I just want to say that much like when I covered boxing and sports and stuff, this is a subject that interests me, and it's all about the interview, because I really see every interviewee as part of this big soap opera. I'm interested in following these artists in their careers and writers, and want to see what led them to the decisions they've made in their storytelling, both writing and art. And every story arc is a new chapter. And you get guys like, here's name dropping, Stuart Immonen, who changes his art style with each book that he, you know, gets to do. But it's, oh, why are you doing it this way? This, you know, same goes with writers as well. So, yeah, feel free to keep scoring. That's one name drop, and I'm sure there'll be many more. But, yeah, it's small J journalism. I'm interested in the story, and it has, until the interest goes away, I'll keep doing it.
Another reason, for me, one of the biggest reasons that I keep coming back to it, even though I've quit 6 or 7 times. it's the people that I get to surround myself with, the creative people in this industry that are just amazing, and that I'm now lucky enough to call friends. And that really, as a frustrated creative person...
That was a silent name drop.
That really, I mean, that's something that I get off on, is just being around those creative people all the time is really fulfilling to me.
Well, I want to let everybody know that the only reason I'm still doing my podcast after 4 years is because nobody else is doing a gay comic-themed podcast. So if one of you motherfuckers steps up and does it, I can finally quit. That's it, seriously.
Seriously, you want
here? Around Comics has been doing a gay podcast for years.
Yeah, really? That's the bad gay.
I guess for me, lately, I've kind of scaled back my show, doing it every 2 weeks, because I've been going insane. And as a solo podcaster, speaking in the mic for 40 minutes, it's crazy. And I've been wanting to quit for years, and I never have. But
go with this.
But lately I've kind of turned it into an interview show where I've kind of taken a cue from John and talking not solely to artists or writers, but really to the publishers themselves and the editors who create the collected editions and the reprints, and talk about the craft that goes into the reprints from the old golden age up to today. And when these guys, they're you know, when they talk about the craft and they talk to me, it's a really fun conversation that we can have, because it's very kind of boring. But these guys find out that there is an audience for something like that. No, but they find out there is an audience for collected editions, and not just the latest Spider-Man book coming out.
Well, it's kind of dovetailing off that. Every one of these shows is different, kind of has mm-hmm. their own unique, you know, either format or feel. I mean, we have, you know,
gay, just go ahead and say it, Chris.
Gay thing. you know, it's the... CGS is, you know, been described by a lot of people as being, you know, that you know, kind of clubhouse feel of just a bunch of friends getting together.
Email women hate
the only show, collected editions. Whenever you kind of sat around and started thinking about what kind of format you wanted, how did you, you know, was it just that natural, you know, this is what we're going to do, or did you put a lot of thought into, you know, this is why we're going to do this format?
Well, we actually can thank Peter, you know, because when Sean first started, got the podcasting bug, it was because of time you spent on CGS, and you guys had a nice in-depth conversation as to what kind of podcast, you know, Sean, you know, was wanting to do. And initially he was thinking, you know, monthly, you know, doing, focusing. It's we started off as a monthly with a rotating, you know, Sean and new, it was going to be an experienced reader and a new reader coming in, and it was going to be a rotating cast. And we did the first episode, and I was like, dude, you're not getting another host. I had too much fun with this. And so we had this going into it, this mindset that, there was already Indie Spinner Rack. There was already, you know, a lot of, you know, interview shows. There was, you know, overall discussion. So no one was focusing on DC, just DC properties. And so we went right in there. And so from day one conception, we've kind of kept the same vibe and groove going along, with the only change being it became a co-host and not a single host.
Yeah, a lot of us started real early, so we had the benefit.
We're all early now.
Yeah, we had the benefit. You know, we didn't have to sort of say, okay, what's not being talked about? We could just talk about something, and it could change from episode to episode. It can be a single topic. It could be reviews. It could be an interview. And, you know, then you got hit a period where new podcasts would come up, and they would be more targeted towards a certain topic. And that was great, because they were actually finding a way through all the ensemble podcasts or through the general comic talk stuff. And I always tell a lot of new podcasters, you know, go out and find something you really want to talk about, because, or make it a niche podcast. You know, the Uncanny X-Cast are two guys who have made a huge name for themselves and have a huge following because they were one of the first to do X-Men. And that was great. So, you know, we didn't have to walk through a minefield. You know, now it's a little tougher. But on the flip side,
three Green Arrow podcasts out there.
Really?
I can see with the X-Men, because there are enough books to support it, to talk about it week after week. I don't know how, honestly, the Green Lantern and the Green Arrow podcasts do it when you're just talking about one monthly book. It's like, what the? And then more so Green Arrow, obviously, because Green Lantern, I guess, now has three.
I think if it's done well, creators.
Hey, man, and a lot of power to the hosts that are able to do it, but that's what I'm saying. And also, no offense to the people that have gone to biweekly and monthly podcasts, if you want to grow a listenership and you are new, weekly really does matter.
Yeah.
You really need to kind of be there every week. And, you know, and I even break a rule where I don't really have a set. I kind of have a set day, and I always say that it's usually going to be on Tuesday. A lot of times it's Wednesday. Sometimes it's Thursday. I admit to that. But that's why, I mean, and I'll even stretch that week to. Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah, can we talk to our invoice department? Sorry about that. But anyway, sometimes that happens. But I do. I try my best to do a minimum of 4 shows a month, and I always hit that. And a lot of times more than that. So it helps.
Anything else from you guys?
I didn't really think about the format, but I don't think we should start the show. I'd never heard a comic book podcast before we did our first one. So.
But you guys had an established website that you're basically...
it was there.
Well, established, strong word.
There was one guy who went to it.
Daryl. but you guys basically took the concept of what you're doing online and just made a podcast.
Yeah, but I was the most organic. I can't say, like... Ron's like, I totally thought about it. Not that I was trying
to. It's been a long time on this.
You needed me. Always thinking. Sorry.
I don't think Ron Collins has figured out a format yet.
That's a format issue.
We're announcing our new format tomorrow.
You're like that kid who comes back to junior year of high school and now he's gone.
Oh, exactly. I'd like to be known as Ray.
Not your name.
Okay, Ray. Good for you. Ray.
I miss the magazine format. Bring it back. Ray, I was the one.
You're the
Did
one.
You really
I
like
on that?
I was the one.
Will Pfeiffer was on that.
Yeah, Will was awesome. He's got his voice art.
Well, we want to open it up to our illustrious guest here.
Wait, just guess.
We have a guess. if you have a question,
we had somebody who had a comment before.
Yeah, did someone want to comment on the
comment on John's question
or something? No,
about the success or failure.
You got 3 seconds. I just feel like it's kind of the reverse. I feel like comic books and graphic novels and these screenplays, you know, books that are turned into screenplays, benefit Hollywood more than the other way around.
Sure.
And, you know, as a podcaster and trying to express that interest to the readers, I think we do more justice than the movies do. You know, the podcast we do is more based around stuff that's not normally that you would find on typical rack. We do a lot of independence and try to mix it up so that way the readers that are listening to our podcast may pick up something that they normally wouldn't pick up on the show.
Also speaking to it, converted audience. It's preaching the choir in a certain sense. You're not actually growing the collective audience. You're showing the audience that there is a broader horizon, which is, by the way, a wonderful thing. It's a really good thing to do, and I love hearing from listeners. I'm sure everybody's like, oh, I never even thought, look at that. And that's always good. But, like, a movie, like, the idea in everybody's mind, you know, at least in the first half of the 2000s, this will bring them into the shops. That didn't happen.
That's not there.
Exactly. I feel the same way, man.
The movies are huge successes.
Right.
Selling more bed sheets.
Exactly. And
everyone knows who Green Lantern was in a couple months. That's more than they can ever have.
Right. Yeah. But the publishers, the direct market, the creators, like that was their thing. Like this is gonna be the thing for us. The movie, they don't care. They, you know, they have the property. They're making money from that, the toys and whatever. And so in that way, it's a huge success because whatever the comic book success would have been almost insignificant.
Well, that's why it depends on the publisher. That's why I said to begin with. And you brought up Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Scott Pilgrim, box office, not, you know, failure, but certainly not a huge success. Big boom for Oni. Iron Man, you know, does, you know, X hundreds of millions of dollars. And
but for every Iron Man, you're going to have a Jonah Hex, though.
Well, okay. True, but you'll also have a Hellboy. Hellboy actually resulted in better book sales for Dark Horse.
Yeah, so the smaller the publisher, the bigger the payoff.
I bet the Jonah Hex movie kept the title going longer than it would have otherwise.
Exactly.
I mean, even indirectly, which is great.
From an inside corporate decision, I think you're right about that. Mm-hmm. And also, I was going to say, Road to Perdition, really, which was made by another movie company, and even though it was a DC book, they let the movie option get away, and that sold a lot of books. Okay. So,
I really don't need the microphone, but they kept moving me forward. In response to Jonah Hex, I think the benefit of Jonah Hex, I work in a library, I got one Jonah Hex title in. I never saw it. I didn't think we got it in. It had gone out 10 times.
That's awesome.
Every time it came in, it would go out. Why? Jonah Hex isn't that well known. People know Iron Man.
Yeah.
They know him from, okay, maybe they picked a comic up as a kid and it had Iron Man in it. So they kind of know the story. Your lesser known properties are the ones that are going to go out more. And a lot of people are going more towards the library for that than they are to the comic books.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, and I'm really glad you said that because I know another potential podcaster that has a library background. And I honestly think that that is an area that isn't covered by podcasting, or when we always talk about how books are penetrating and getting to readers and stuff, it is the one area that is always neglected, it seems, from the conversation. Yeah. And I think there are interesting numbers there.
And then tell your friend, focus on the adults, because there's plenty out there for teens and for children. But as somebody who buys the adult graphic novels, I'm having a hard time finding reviews for mature rated, because they assume that, hey, it's going to be for an adult, but if I get one in that's got all sorts of sex and stuff, I also have to be, I have to watch my back on that. And
what city? What city are you based
in? I'm in Wakanda, Illinois.
Okay,
so
sure.
I'm a tiny little town.
Oh, yeah.
But it's called Wakanda. Wakanda.
Do you have... Have city fathers looking over your shoulder in terms of, hey, what's coming in the library? I think it's a little too much
nudity.
Come
on. What's a C, not a K?
No, honestly, yeah.
I don't have that, but I've only been there for about 2 years, and one of the first graphic novels I had, somebody picked it up off the shelf and went, oh my God, there's nudity in here. How dare this be on the teen shelf? And it wasn't on the teen shelf. So there is some of that that I didn't know that, but it had gotten really good reviews.
Okay.
So there's, please give me more resources.
No, I understand. So, no, that's cool. Yeah. No, I'm really glad you said something.
What was the one, gentleman? What's your pod? The one who, the first question, what was your podcast?
We're called Comaholics.
Comaholics, cool.
Very cool. Yeah, really, if you have a, if you guys are podcasters, please say it.
PopCultureNetwork.com. Our theme is, we do about 3 main titles.
Okay, lose the bullhorn in the on the floor on the convention. Would you lose the bullhorn? That's my only comment.
No,
that's not that.
Was that Pop?
That's not that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was Pop. I'm sorry, lad. My apologies. I'm like, wait a minute. If you're from that one, I don't like you. I'm trying to do a goddamn interview, and I got a guy sitting there doing this. I'm like, hey, man.
That's just getting all real.
I get it. Exactly.
Wow.
Deep breaths.
I know. I know. Never mind. You're a wonderful show.
I endure.
Thank you. I brew my own beer, and sometimes we'll have my home brew. We'll drink beer. And
you're talk cool. About awesome. Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
I like this guy.
The thing is, you've got to think of the longer term effect of all the other media stuff. Because Iron Man movie comes out, so all of a sudden there's all these Iron Man toys that were never out before. And I'm buying them for my godson. And it's not just Batman and Superman and Spider-Man like you used to get when I was a kid. Green Lantern action figures are out. I couldn't find Green Lantern stuff 5 years ago, and now it's everywhere.
Yep.
So when he's 10 years old, is he going to start reading comics because he remembers playing with an Iron Man toy I got? It might not be immediately from the movies, but if longer term, I think you're going to see more readers from all the other stuff.
Well, I think another problem with it is also the direct market itself is still an issue because you have, you know, potentially you have millions of people going to see a film, but even if they want to then go and get a comic, you know, the average person doesn't necessarily even know where a comic store is or wants to go to buy a comic. So,
yeah, the average person doesn't want a comic book. It's a dirty word.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
The medium itself, the format, has got a scarlet letter on
absolutely.
It. You know?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But I still think there's a potential to convert at least a small percentage of people to readers. I mean, with better outlet, with better management of those
I think they still need to figure out, with the exception of the occasional newspaper article, where the digital readers are going to come from. How are we enticing potential digital readers? Because
yeah.
I think they still have almost the same problem that the direct market does in terms of, great, it's there. Do you know it's there? Do you know that you can get it?
You have to search to find it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If you think about it, if you're talking about mainstream media and their coverage of it, wherever, like, you only have to go so far as the local coverage of any Comic-Con to see bullshit stories on, like, look at POW, the costumes! Like, that's
comics aren't for kids anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, the news coverage around New York Comic Con in October, I was just like, turn the TV off. I can't.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. And I don't know a way around that. I can sit on our show and we can probably be like, no, they're totally, for everybody, it's every kind of story, it's a great medium.
I don't have a question about Iron Man, although I could talk about that.
Sit down.
Attica. Okay.
I felt bad about that.
That's just a joke.
I'm sorry.
I'm just asking questions and you're yelling at me. Okay, so we don't do a podcast. My co-host is over there. We actually do a weekly radio show for our college.
Awesome.
And the format is... Yeah.
Seriously, you should.
We thought about it. It's something. It's real complicated, but we're working on it.
Good.
And so we share segments, but this one of the segments is nerd news, and we talk primarily about comics.
Nerd news.
So one of the things that what I wanted to ask you guys with experience and lengthy experience in podcasting is for someone, all of us here likely enjoy podcasts. We like listening to them like it's a thing. But for most people, that format is really foreign. How do we get people to, as opposed to being like, hey, I've got a blog, come read my blog, and they can skim it at their leisure or whatever. But with a podcast, you kind of have to be invested and sit down and actually listen, which is something that ADD people who like playing Angry Birds every 20 seconds on their phone, like, we don't know how to do. I have trouble with that. I have trouble sitting in the booth that long.
Did you listen to podcasts while playing Angry Birds?
Yeah, I was going to say, I normally end up doing something else as well.
Are you
so,
doing
the
show?
No. So my question... No, but my question is, so how do you convince people who like comics or like nerdy things already, but convince them to sit down and listen to anything from 15 minutes to an hour-long podcast?
You'd be really good at it.
Don't tease it.
I have a question for you, Purple Dress.
I was Fire the Dragon earlier, but no one understood what it was.
Fuck that.
Go, Steve, go.
What's your show is, it's a college radio show?
Yes.
And how long is it?
We're a part of a 3-hour long news magazine.
Okay, why are they sitting and listening to you for 3 hours? I mean,
well, they think people tend to come in and out. My segment's 15 minutes and his is 15 and we do it together.
Okay.
So it's about a half an hour.
Okay.
Well, you know what? When I first started doing this, our intention was to keep the shows 30 minutes. That's it, 30 minutes. And we felt that was the greatest length ever. And then there are guys who do shows 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I don't
and
do that.
Then, 6 hours.
I did 2 hours.
3 hours?
I did
six?
We average usually about 3 hours. We did a 6-hour marathon.
Oh, well, the bench is broken. At least they're broken.
At least they're broken down.
We have to gift the gab. We just like talking about
it. The show is awesome, Sean.
And obviously, if you're doing this radio show, you enjoy doing this.
Right.
That's what you're doing. I mean, that's where you go with it. That's how you do your podcast. I mean, I don't nowadays. I don't worry about it 30 minutes or an hour.
But are you saying like outside listeners? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, how to get people listening? Because like my mom will listen. That's cool. But like, I want people to actually want to come to us for news or talk or whatever.
That requires an active listenership. They have to want to seek it out and they have to do it. Like, the fact is, it's more convenient than radio because they don't have to be there at a certain time. They can pause. They can stop. They can come
listen
back.
On demand.
It requires a knowledgeable and an active audience.
But she wants to know how do we get those
things. For you really good on the show. Like when they try it out, get them immediately because you're awesome at it. Well, it's true, but
I understand.
I'm well, comic book podcast now.
And can you contact other podcasters who have them on your show?
Well, cross promotion, you have passion about what you're talking about. If you're sitting there and you believe what you're saying and you're loving what you're saying, people will sit and listen to you. We joke around, like 3-hour shows are nothing for us. We did a 6-hour marathon on Watchmen. We've done
a time machine, but you go back to 2005.
The reason why I do interviews.
I think honestly, one thing that I've done is tell people how I listen to the show. I listen to podcasts when I'm commuting back and forth to work.
Okay.
I listen to podcasts whenever I'm jogging. I listen to podcasts. You know, tell people.
Shut up.
I listen to podcasts when I jog. Never seen that.
But But you still want to know how you get people to listen.
Ultimately,
not how
ultimately,
they listen.
It's, you've got to have compelling content.
And that's why I do interviews, and that's why also not only do I interview the comic creators that I like, but I try to get celebrities that love comics. Like I had Patton Oswalt on, and I had, you know, I mean, I talked to Scott Aukerman from Comedy Death Ray, and it is that kind of cross.
So call, yes, call. Back.
Well, and I mean, no, but honestly, yeah, but wait, honestly, there, and a, but honestly, you know, being, but guys, honestly, when I and all I can say is when I was in college radio, we did manage to get in college radio.
Yeah.
A few celebrities, and given that you're nerd news, I would think that your union has like comedians come in and stuff like that, and does shows at your college possibly.
We have.
Okay, because yeah, I mean, I would honestly like try and tap into that for your nerd news segments, because then also put out the podcast and have as your subject guest. I mean, that's why Patton's one of my most downloaded shows, because it's Patton Oswalt. It has nothing to do with me.
Right. Go to
it's
a movie
the subject.
Theater when a movie is out, like the next door movie, and see if the movie theater will have you set up a table.
There you go. That's true too.
Okay. Thank you. Next question.
Oh, hey, I'm actually touring full time.
Sorry, guys.
I'm actually touring my film across all the conventions right now, and I'd like to thank you guys because you are creating a community that allows me, gives me drinking buddies wherever I go.
There you go.
And it's really great. Like last night, we had a few pints. It was great times. But I was going to actually ask, with the declining sales in the industry, who do you think is the villain behind this, in a sense? Is it Dr. Wortham and him still having an effect?
Got to stop one.
No.
You're not serious, sorry.
Oh, no. Is it a precedent that was set in the 50s?
Yeah, but no, that was literally 50 years ago. I don't know of any parent that's really thinking about who read Dr. Wortham
and
is worried about
that. He has a point that...
The stigma that started then?
The stigma that started then still exists. You know, comics are... For kids.
Comics
are
themselves.
Worthless, you know, pop culture.
Yeah, but
it's not themselves because they were for kids forever.
No.
And also...
Yeah,
Everything bad they say about comics, they were. For decades. That's
yeah, but
they
also were the first readers for a lot of children, and obviously there's a lot of schools that believe in that, and I think that that has been a successful counter-argument since the weepy liberal assholes like myself that, you know, have gotten older and are like, no, you're wrong, sir. They, you know, comics teach children how to read. I've got a jock lunkhead ex-brother-in-law who's like, you know, my kids aren't into comics like you, John. And I'm like, yeah, but your one kid has a learning reading disability. Maybe it's a good idea to have him reading something. And if it's not a book, he might like the book with pictures. And suddenly he stopped. He said, you know, you're right. And the kid has gotten to be a better reader.
Oh.
And today that man is Neal Adams. So
I don't think there's any one bill.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination. It's direct market.
It's the price.
Most comics are about men in colorful tights.
No.
And by the way, novels, I think the average monthly still sells as well as the average novel. I think 30,000 is not a failure. Of something that is published. I really don't. And that's something Rich Johnson has said before, and I really agree with him, that I understand that it's not the million that Superman did in the 40s and stuff, but it ain't bad.
It's a
different
medium.
I think even 15,000 or 20,000 and stuff. I mean, that's what I'm saying, man. I understand what you mean, but...
It's
a representation of what we want mainstream to accept what they love. You know, it's like, it's always about... Why don't they look at it like we look at it? Well, you know what? They're never going to. It doesn't, you know, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much we talk about it, no matter how many times you try and turn someone on to what you know and you love, it doesn't matter. It's not going to change. Why? But we just continue to try.
So that's all, folks. Thanks.
And I think a lot of people fixate on the top 10 comics sold.
I would say we'd just stop releasing those numbers.
I like looking at like the bottom 100 and seeing where they are. You know, those 5, 10, 15,000.
That's my entire poll list.
It's a different way of looking.
Most every creator looks at that top 100, top 300, and goes, "Well, that's not right." So I,
And as for the bottom two, I know people wring their hands when they're like, "Oh my God, you know, Publisher A of today is like hanging by a thread." It's like, you know, Valiant did, CrossGen did, Eclipse did. There have always been smaller publishers that can't weather these storms. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it is in publishing in general. It was St. John's in the 50s and Pride Comics and all those other, you know, companies and stuff. Quality is another one that got bought out. You know, I mean, it's shit happens. But I mean, I do think that comics in general...
I don't know.
All things reading material.
Right. Yes.
They're taking it as shit because
you're right. You
know, and people aren't reading.
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably speak for Sal. He hates it when I do that. We enjoy much more talking about the comics and not how many of them are sold. Thank you. You can really depress yourself and lead into some really boring conversation if you fix it on sales. It's nothing that we can.
Also look for Jason Wood's articles on comic sales.
Jason loves talking about that stuff. Next question.
Hi, my name is Mario. I know.
Hi, Mario.
Hey, Mario.
Hey.
It's been like a year from today around this year. This is the first time I've met Mr. Jordy.
This is the first time that we saw.
Which Sal and I would argue about the Green Hornet.
What's your question?
I just want to go back to the beginning. My first exposure to comics in any fashion was watching Superman the movie with my father and X-Men the animated series back in the 90s. That was my first exposure. I didn't start reading comics until Teen Titans in the early 2000s.
Oh, there you go.
Nice. And Ultimate Spider-Man was like the first book I read.
Cool.
At that point. But the thing I really want to talk about is that every single one of your shows, it's sort of my, it's just the way I love entertainment. I don't really watch television as much as I used to. I used to watch it a lot as a kid, but I don't find enjoyment watching the things I do.
That's it, your time's up.
That's an awesome thing.
The strong music behind it.
It's the Hulk music.
Exactly.
But yeah, just you guys are able to provide me with something that I want to listen to every day of the week, majority of the time. And it's fun. I don't watch television. I listen to you guys talk. Yeah. That's the only entertainment I need. And
thanks,
bro. That's awesome. So how does it feel to have like this people that probably feel like me that have this audience?
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm walking around the show today looking at all these 11 o'clock shirts, and that's really cool. I know the CGS shirts and the iCambo shirts. It's like, wow, I don't know that person.
I have to get a shirt.
I do. 25 years in radio, I have not gotten the gratification I have out of my 6 years of podcasting. It's the truth. And really halfway through it, I was, or I should say 6 months into podcasting, I was unemployed and looking for another radio job. And just, you know, trying to make ends meet. And that's when, like, really a lot of the creators are like, hey, I want to do your show. And it's like, God. And I would tell my radio friends, I'm like, you know I haven't gotten a radio gig, but and I have no money. But I got to tell you, I'm having a blast doing this stuff. It's great. It means a lot.
Our motto is uniting the world's mightiest heroes one listener at a time. And I tell you, that one listener at a time really speaks true. Because we get people who email. And I got a guy at this C2E2 who went to his first convention, last C2E2. That was his first con. Yeah, and he picked up a postcard from our table and has been listening since. Or somebody found us online and have been listening. Somebody found us because they were looking for a comic, like, haha, funny, funny, and started listening and got into comics because of our show. So they're out there. I think that's awesome for, you know, again, go back to the new people who might want to start podcasting.
Do y'all have listeners that have contacted you and said they don't read comics? They're not interested in comics, but they like listening to the show.
Yes.
We have a lot of people who stop reading comics but still listen.
It's like when you read the TV guides on
Washington. Yeah.
Lost Boys. Barnard Hughes. My man. Nice.
We've been getting that, you know, with a couple of listeners. They're calling or writing in saying, hey, I can't pick up all the DC titles. Thanks for covering what you guys are doing. And that's always a kind of a cool feeling for us that, you know, because, as I said, we go on and on and on and on and on and on. And we're glad someone is out there is appreciating what we're doing. Yeah,
that's another thing for me, because I can barely afford comics in college right now. I listen to you guys.
Go to your library.
Well, no, I did that, and that's where
it's cool.
The Dark Knight Returns.
Cool.
Somebody asked a question about piracy, so we can really start fighting.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Mara. Next question.
I feel like I'm testifying before Congress here. I was wondering if you could talk about your strategies, or non-strategies, as the case might be, regarding editing. Because, as a listener, nothing sucks the life out of me quicker than podcasts that are not edited.
I edit the shit out of my show.
Yeah. Well, now,
literally,
now,
I do.
Right. At the end of this question, those of you who do it, please repeat the name of your podcast so I don't have to hear you. But my favorite podcast is House to Astonish by Paul O'Brien and Al Kennedy, because they compress, Al edits it down to an hour-long podcast every 2 weeks. And it is really, and beyond being smart and clever and funny, I mean, I can handle an hour a week. When they get up to about 90 minutes, an hour 45, 2 hours a week, usually it's just them blathering and thinking that their improv is really funny and clever and interesting, and it might be great for them. It's not great for the listener.
I think you're also testifying in front of Congress.
Anyway,
yields the floor to the gentleman.
Which of you, do you believe in editing? Do you not believe in editing? And if you believe in it, please repeat the name of your podcast.
I'm going to defer this to Peter Rios.
Hey, why?
Because
you don't edit.
Don't edit. Part of the show and cut it out.
The trick.
So that you can play the whole thing.
No,
the trick is to do a podcast and make them think you don't edit. There's a couple of responses to that, I think. First of all, what do you mean by editing? Do you mean taking out pauses? Right. Do you mean cutting out stuff,
going through and dishing the bits that are
that don't work?
Either we all have our goals. Just useless rambling or things that go on too long.
For 2 hours and sit down and try to edit that.
But House of Astonish does that.
And that's what I do too.
Another listener that likes listening to 4.5 hours of podcast. You can't do everybody.
Let me stop here.
To answer your question though, I highly believe in editing. Because I'm an idiot, and I like to find out what I say.
Yeah,
I think when they say they're going to edit something, they don't.
Yes!
I'll cut that out, that's fine.
Wait, so you edit down to 2 hours and start 2 hours?
We edit down.
Yeah. You edit down to 2 hours.
A lot of the times we do still wind up at an hour because there's content in there that, even though it might be boring for some, I think is relevant.
But is it weekly, or is this?
Let Jim talk.
Okay, first off, Raging Bullets is my show, and my co-host, he's our editor. My co-host is our editor, and we go through and goes through, cuts out the ums, cuts out the pauses. You know, if we do some regurgitation where we're saying the exact same thing over again, he'll take it out. You know, because one, I do a lot of, you knows, ums, whatnots, and he kills a lot of those and actually makes me sound intelligent, which is very difficult on his part. And but there is part of it where you got to keep some of the ramblings, you got to keep some of your tangents, and that's, you know, and it's sometimes that hits, sometimes it misses. And so yes, we believe heavily in editing, and it's all Sean who, you know, after 3 hours of recording, I go home and I rest, and he goes and re-listens and does his editing for another 3 hours.
It's very difficult in ensemble shows, and I think Peter and Steve probably have the most experience with this, and Josh to extent.
There's three, and
you guys. What I'm trying to get at is that most ensemble shows have someone that is a show driver that kind of is in the driver's seat, and you guys have kind of traded that off sometimes. And I think there's editing, there's like pre-editing, and the show driver needs to understand when the conversation isn't going anywhere,
right,
and be able to kind of on the fly self-edit, say, okay, we're moving on.
So let's move on. You edit, and what's yours?
Yeah, it's Collective Comics Library. I basically treat my show like a nightly news broadcast.
Sure.
You know, I have my show notes, and I go through. And what I do is, but Jim's right, I go through from the beginning to the end, cut out everything that's unnecessary, because as a solo podcaster, you know, I have my long pauses, and I shuffle my notes around, and I just... I don't turn off the mic. I just let it go, and then I go back and redo it.
I mean, just collecting or collecting?
Collective comics library.
I'll
meet you after.
Right after the panel?
Yeah.
Okay. Come on up. Talk,
yeah, that's a good idea.
Talk about editing and all that.
Ian!
Yay!
Hello, Ian.
You're just because you're not up here.
Oh, dude.
Man, stop.
It's not him talking.
I actually just want to say, as somebody who does do a podcast, there's a reason my show hasn't come out in a month, and it's because of Ed. Okay?
Oh, there you go.
You need to have the time to actually sit down there and do it. And if you don't, then don't. That's it, you know.
Why don't you introduce yourself and tell people what show you
do? I'm Ian Lovenstein. I do Comic Timing. Question for the panel, not exactly related to sales, more related to what people are buying and not buying. I do find it interesting that the past couple of months when Amazon put out their lists, almost everything on those lists has been not superhero stuff.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's been stuff like Smile. It's been stuff like Scott Pilgrim. It's been stuff that's, you know, what some people consider indie, but, you know, not necessarily the mainstream stuff. Like, you'll find a Batman book or two on there, and that's about it. I mean, do you guys feel that this is exactly where the industry is heading?
I hope so.
Yeah. Right.
What do you mean by the industry?
Well,
because there's the direct market, in which case, no.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, bookstore sales or digital sales or whatever, I think you'll see a much less kinky atmosphere forward.
Yeah, for you know, several years, I've been, you know, everyone says, you know, you gotta get kids reading comics. Comics, you know, kids need to read comics. Kids need, it's like, no, your biggest untapped market are adults.
Readers. Just readers in general and other readers.
The beautiful thing about something like Amazon is it's a democratic system. It doesn't matter if you're Marvel or if you're a self-publisher, you can get the same exposure on Amazon and you can get the same amount of
reasonably so.
Well, reasonably so.
But I know what you mean.
But more so than comic book shops.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think with digital comics, as that, you know, it's more and more prevalent. It's going to be even more so.
Plus,
it won't matter, you know.
There's more good stuff coming out.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
The indie from book publishers now moving into the graphic novel thing. There's, I mean, at the end of the year, most of us do award shows or whatever. It's hard to pick your best original graphic novel at the end of a year because there's a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. Well, and also like genre specific stuff. Like my favorite story from way like early internet was, and it has nothing to do with the internet. Tim Truman wanted to do a Western comic and couldn't get any of the mainstream publishers to do it, and he decided to self-publish it himself and did his advertising in the magazine Cowboy and Western Magazine, and he sold 10,000 copies.
That's right.
I mean, that's good. I mean, that's, and it's, the internet has only made it easier, I think, for real mainstream genre-specific material, whether it's comics or not. I mean, I think noir fans will find crime comics and be very pleased and will not give a shit about what Batman and Superman are doing.
I mean, one of the best things I read in the past couple of months is go to Israel in 60 days?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm at Vertigo, and even though it's a Vertigo comic, I'm wondering how many comic shops actually ordered it because it wasn't, you know, standard.
Vertigo's not doing original graphic novels anymore.
Really?
There you go.
So,
where have I been? That's sad.
Right. It was a rumor, but, you know. Come on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Peace out.
Next week, we have about 5 minutes
last
left.
One?
So if you have any questions, we'll try and keep them rolling here for this tournament.
Don't be afraid.
You already have a
score. Ray Mario's got
Mario. What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why is he a Power Rangers?
We've
all been smoking. Yeah, really, man. That's the reason why I do audio, exactly. Nobody wants to see me on it.
Faces for radio.
What? Speak for yourself. I'm damn sexy.
When your recording partner always shows up to work and all can...
Now it's time for the intervention.
Well, so glad you do a solo show.
We're Aaron. This is what we came to see, people. I just want to say that the whole 11 o'clock comics is a misnomer. It should be called 11:05 comics because he's 5 minutes late.
That's
true.
Well, your dogs don't shut up.
You're from Detroit.
Wait,
we're just trying to have a nice meal here.
I would say something really nasty about your podcast, but I don't listen to it.
You know what you get when you mix alcohol and comics? You get real talk. I love when he
Actually, he's on a binge.
And speaks from experience. Because I heard his anniversary show.
I tell you, because, you know, sometimes you get a little nice or whatever. Somebody, but when he talked, I'm like, there goes Chris. That's what I want to hear all the time.
Yeah, you can get some comic gold.
Yeah.
Just a very basic question. How many women are podcasting? Are
seven.
Too little. Comics Slumber Party.
We have, I think,
Birds of Geek.
I think we've got some female comic book podcasters.
Yeah, raise your hands, female pop. No? Really? Birds of Geek? Comic Slumber Party?
Lana? Lana doesn't podcast anymore, does she?
Which one?
Lana Taylor?
She does the Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Comic books.
She stopped?
I think
so. Comic books.
Yeah, girl has boobs, reads comics.
Comic Book Slumber Party is one of another Chicago comic chain podcast.
There's Girls Don't Read Comics. She's a manager at a comic store. She reads one.
Birds of Geek.
Batgirl of Oracle. She does a whole sort of Barbara Gordon podcast. There's
Awesome by Comics.
Awesome by Comics.
Yes, yeah, she's awesome. She is awesome.
She is good.
I think it would be
Star Trek one.
Yeah, she stopped doing comics, which shocked me. Lenny Taylor.
There is a comic book podcast wiki
That Derek Coward.
Yep, Derek did.
So if you punch in maybe comic book podcast wiki, it might come up, and there's a whole list of podcasts there. So it's a start anyway.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we're at the end of our rope and line here. I want to thank all of the podcasters.
Thank you, Chris.
If you haven't already, I think we have combined about 50 years of podcasting.
Five-year anniversary, Wednesday, if you have any questions.
I just want to thank everyone for coming. You're awesome. Woo-hoo! Have a great day.
The podcast panel from C2E2, I hope you enjoyed it. I think it opened some interesting discussion. I hope that the discussion continues at Word Balloon. By all means, if you have any suggestions or comments on some of the things discussed, call the Word Balloon hotline at 312-841-7025. Or if you'd like, go to the Word Balloon message board and you can discuss it over there. But do me a favor, and I'd love to hear what you think about some of the things that we discussed today on the C2E2 podcast panel. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. John Sutra saying thanks again for listening, and reminding you that Word Balloon can be found every Tuesday at ifanboy.com, also at our home site, wordballoon.com, where we have our archive of well over 400 interviews of comic book creators and podcasters, in the case of today's show. There's a couple other podcast episodes in there as well. But check it out. If you have any questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon, or at my name, johnsuntress@facebook.com. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.